We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here's Matt Michaels and Brad Trenago.
Hello and welcome. It is another rousing edition of the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. I am Matt Michaels, Brad Trenago. Hi.
Hello.
Happy Thanksgiving late.
Yeah, same to you.
You are more tan.
It helps. Yeah, when you go to the Bahamas for like a week in support of the women's basketball broadcast, that does help a little bit, yeah.
You smell like coconut and turkey gravy. It's a weird combination.
They did have turkey for us down there, so we had a little bit of a traditional meal. Yeah, after I hit the water slides and the beach a little bit, so can't complain.
You're a water slide guy.
Well, not usually, but I was there. It was there. It was just kind of a, you know, had to conquer the
opportunity.
Yeah, had to get over my fears, and I got peer pressured by an assistant coach that I won't name, and I was able to get it done.
So. Oh, very good. Very proud of you.
Thank
you, buddy. Conquering your fears of the water slide down in the Bahamas. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into our podcast, which, as always, is brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Recently ranked highest in customer satisfaction among auto insurers in the Central Region, 4 out of 5 years in a row by J.D. Power. Shelter Insurance, we're your shield, we're your shelter. Also powered by Raceline. With over 30 years of turnkey project execution, Raceline is an industry leader in engineering, manufacturing, and installation of modular process systems.
Mm-hmm. Click and vroom.
You almost forgot.
I almost forgot my turnkey catchphrase. It's been a little while, man. I'm
trying
rusty.
To get you residuals on that.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Yeah. All right. We will introduce our guest on this week's podcast. She is a forward who plays professionally in the NWSL, also has played in the Mexican League. Mm-hmm. Liga MX, do they put any other name on it? Sarah Lubert, the former Mizzou great, the Jefferson City Jay, who is with us. Is there any other name in Spanish? Because you probably have learned some Spanish over the past couple years.
I've learned a little Spanish. Liga MX Femenil, it's good to go.
All right.
Mouthful.
Yeah, no, that's very good. You know, as you sit here right now, you have been all over in your professional career. How do you think it's been a start for you? Having the chance to play professionally with some of the best in the country and the world is one thing, but, you know, it's going to be 3 seasons, 4 seasons on for you. How do you think it's gone?
I think the first years, you know, you kind of have to push through some stuff, get used to the new level, but now I'm really enjoying it. I've met some amazing people. I've got to play against some of the best, and I'm having a lot of fun.
When was the point where you realized, hey, I can play against some of the best in the world?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I would say once I was in it and playing against them, and maybe it was even after my first game, because my first game was in Utah against the Portland Thorns, and you know, I fouled Lindsey Horan that game, and that was about all I did the entire game. So, yeah, it's taken some time to get some confidence and get used to the level of play, but now it's great.
So when you were growing up, just a little while down the road from Columbia in Jefferson City, was it always Mizzou for you as a girl thinking about where you would go to college and hopefully play someday?
Not really, but I also think I didn't really think a lot about, oh, where am I going to go? It kind of started with the recruiting process. Once Mizzou reached out, I got really excited. And once I toured the campus and got to see all the facilities, I was blown away. And it was a really easy decision after that.
Was there a moment during your time, I guess early on at Mizzou, where it clicked for you that, hey, I can do this. I can be an all SEC level player?
I think I kind of went through it season by season. I came in and had a really successful freshman season, and that kind of took me by surprise, honestly, because I was just trying to be, you know, an impact player. I wasn't expecting to start, but, you know, just trying to enjoy the moment. But yeah, I just tried to take it year by year, and I had a lot of help with that from Blitz. I remember even I talked to Sophie Cunningham my sophomore year, because I was like, how do you deal with the pressure and all of this stuff, you know? And she helped me out. And yeah, I kind of just try to stay as present as possible and make the most of, you know, every training day, every game.
What sort of advice did Sophie have for you in the middle of that season that, again, in case people don't remember, a 10-goal season for a freshman with 18 starts in the Southeastern Conference and the accolades that come with that? Yeah, I'd say that's pressure. What advice did she have for you?
Yeah, she just told me to keep working hard, keep enjoying it. You know, there's always going to be that pressure, but just to keep pushing through and know, and just have confidence. Know that you did it once, you can do it again. You can just keep doing your best and it'll work out.
Favorite memory from your time at Mizzou, does it come from that freshman season, or was there something later on in your career that stands out more?
I would say my freshman season, we had a big win over CU Boulder, and it was an overtime win where we had a set piece. You know, it was golden goal at the time, so there was a set piece. I think Aaron Webb like hung it up back post. Jessica Johnson headed it across the net, and I was just like right there. And they made it really easy for me. I just had to tap it in. But that was awesome. You know, golden goal is so exciting whenever you score that, and everyone gets to run on the field and celebrate. And then it was against a ranked opponent too, so that was really fun.
How do you describe as a player finding the right space in front of net as an attacking player? Is that just instinct? Is that something you can work on? How could you kind of put that into terms of the way you go about finding that soft spot in a moment like that on a set piece where you're looking for the goal?
I think some players have more of an instinctive kind of intuition to know. You know, they say, oh, he or she's always in the right place at the right time. I think that's kind of how some players do just have that instinctive goal scoring ability. But then there's also ways to work on it too, little tips and tricks, staying on the back shoulder and anticipating all of that stuff. But yeah, I think it's a little bit of both.
Kind of the opposite. You talked about instinct and feel, and then I think about penalty kicks and how there's not, you can't necessarily do certain things instinctively there, but what are some of the keys to being a successful penalty kick taker? Because I think some folks are like, oh, you're like just a few feet away from goal. Of course you're going to make it every time. And you see statistically that's not the case.
Yeah.
So what are some of the keys to being as successful as you can be in that?
I think for me it's repetition, it's practice, and it's just kind of knowing where you're going to go either. Well, I mean, you can do it a few ways, but you know, sometimes people just are like, I'm going to go on to this corner, this side every time. And then there's also times where you can kind of maybe keep your head a little higher and try to read if the goalie jumps early. I missed my fair share of penalties here, but yeah, I think a lot of it's just confidence too, just going up and being like, I'm gonna bury this in the back of the net and just drive through the ball, and it you know, it doesn't always work out, but that's kind of, it's part of the game. You know, you miss chances and you just keep going. But yeah.
The former Missouri Tiger striker and forward and also playing professionally now, Sarah Lubert, is with us on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast this week. You know, as you think about the things that you took away from the University of Missouri and your time here, whether it is on the field or off, what really has stuck with you?
That's a loaded question. I think one thing on the field that Blitz always enforced was blue collar, you know, mentality, working hard. And I love that. I love that, you know, giving yourself the power to like control what you can control. If I work hard and work smart and do what I need to do, I will have success. I've always loved that mentality. And I think the new coach, Stephanie, she has that mentality too and really drives that home with her team, which I love to see. And then off the field, I think just being a good person. And, you know, I've made so many amazing friends here at Mizzou. I met so many people and I had so much support. And that's something that I really value, and I know I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have all that support.
Well, you mentioned Coach Blitz, and then Stephanie Golan mm-hmm. is now taken over as the head coach. You've had a chance to meet her. What have you touched on it a little bit already, but what have you liked about her and what she's been able to put out on the pitch so far?
Yeah, I met her briefly, and I met a lot of the other coaches whenever I met her. But I also follow her on Twitter, and she's got like all these very amazing tweets. I think she's a competitor, which I love to see. And I, from what I can see, she holds the team to a very high standard, and she has very high aspirations for the team. And I'm excited to see what she does with the team. I think she has a lot of resources to work with, and I think she's going to do an amazing job.
So when you are in your professional locker room, and there are people, a lot of people, especially in the NWSL, who have come through the American collegiate system and played at the highest level like you, is there smack talk going on when there's like head-to-head matchups and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. for sure. I don't know how many times Mizzou has played other teams, so I haven't done a lot of the smack talking. But yeah, there's some like ACC smack talk going. There's a lot of ACC girls, and then we saw a lot on the Red Stars, so there's a lot of that goes on.
Well, you mentioned earlier about realizing that you had the ability to play at the professional level, and that's one thing, but when did you decide, okay, I guess, was there ever a question for you about making the commitment in terms of deciding to be a professional soccer player? Because you've got to give up a lot of stuff in terms of, like, there's not a pro team in Jefferson City, Missouri. I mean, you had to, you know, leave the country for a stretch to do that. When did you decide that, you know what, I love this so much, I want to keep going?
I kind of decided that a little later. I didn't really know what my future held. Even at the end of my senior season, it wasn't the best season for us as a team. So I was kind of on the fence about, do I want to keep playing? I had that opportunity or an offer kind of to become just a TA student here with one of my professors and get a master's. And, you know, that was like a very stable option that I could have chosen. And I really had a hard time kind of deciding, actually. And then, you know, I still entered the draft. I didn't expect to get drafted, but here in the U.S., you have to enter it to be able to, like, potentially try out for a team. So I still entered the draft, and then I actually went to this, like, showcase kind of it wasn't a tryout. It was just, like, an opportunity in Dallas with the WPSL to kind of – for, like, people who wanted to go play professionally, could, like, go and play around. It was some training, some 11v11 games, and there were a few professional coaches there. And I went down. My mom actually drove me down to Dallas one weekend in January. And this was after, like, my season had ended with Mizzou. And I spent the weekend playing, and I did pretty well. And at the end of the weekend, I got back in the car. My mom and I were about to drive home, and there were some girls talking to one of the coaches there. He was a coach for at the time, the Utah Royals, in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. It was Scott Parkinson. And I was like, oh, I didn't say hi to him. Mom, like, but it'll be okay. Let's go. And she goes, I'm not driving you home until you go introduce yourself to that coach. So I'm like, okay, fine. So I get out of the car and I go introduce myself to him. And we start chatting and I'm kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do, whatever. I don't know where I want to play. And he told me, I know you can play professionally. I don't know if it's in the NWSL, but I know that you can have a professional career from what I've seen this weekend. And that gave me a lot of like hope, and I kind of got really excited about that. We exchanged numbers, and then a few weeks later, he invited me to his like the Utah tryout for preseason. And yeah, one thing led to another. He actually ended up getting hired by the Red Stars a few weeks later and was the assistant coach. And I ended up going on a tryout there and making the team. But yeah, so it was kind of like a process. It wasn't something that I was really, that I knew I was going to do ever, like really playing throughout college. There were even times where Blitz would come up to me and be like, you're going to play professionally, right? And I was kind of like, oh, maybe, I don't know. Do you think I can? So yeah, I think some of it was maybe a little bit of like fear of failure. I didn't know if I could really do it, but obviously I'm really happy that I did.
Yeah. And you've made it to a point now in your professional career where you've had multiple stops, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But I mean, the world stopped when you were starting your career as a professional. Mm-hmm. COVID happened, yeah. And the NWSL said, well, we got to do something. And eventually came up with the Challenge Cup, mm-hmm. which is where you made your debut.
Yeah.
But what was that experience like? And did you talk to people who were veterans of the league about facing the unique challenges of trying to fit in with a club while also having COVID and the world in a completely odd place? I mean, you are part of a generation of athletes that did not have a normal experience trying to start your careers.
No, that was a very strange time. And it's weird for me to say this, but actually COVID is kind of part of the reason why I got to try out for the Red Stars. So my last semester of Mizzou, I had one more math class to take. I'm a math major, so I had this one last proofreading math class that was so hard. I couldn't get it online. The professor was like, you have to be in class. You can't, you know, miss classes. So the Red Stars invited me to preseason. Normally it starts in February, March, and you have to be there. I mean, they train every day. It's a professional mm-hmm. team. So they invited me to that. I couldn't get my last class to be online. So I was like, I can't go. So my solution was going to be to play for the Red Stars reserve team, which is a lot of like college girls, that summer, and then try to just go play overseas. So I was talking to agents, all this stuff. And I was training here at Mizzou. The strength coaches in the weight room were helping me out, giving me all these workouts to do, and I was still practicing with the team. And then COVID hit, and everything got canceled. So I went home. I trained with my sister for a few months, and we had a lot of fun training together, actually, in Jeff City. But then, I don't know, you know, we were kind of in limbo. Everyone was in limbo. I remember graduating. We finished school. Online school, like May 15th, I think, around that time. That was like a Saturday when I graduated. I got a call the following Wednesday from Scott Parkinson, the wow. Red Stars assistant coach, saying, hey, we're having a preseason. Can you come and be in Chicago by Friday? And I was like, okay, yep, I'll be there. Thank you so much. He goes, we're having a Zoom call tonight. You need to get on it. So I get on the Zoom call. It's like Julie Ertz, Kalia Watt, Alyssa Nair, all these amazing, Tierna Davidson, all these amazing players. And I'm just sitting on the Zoom call like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So I get to Chicago. We had a 4-week preseason. And it was the weirdest thing ever because I was living in an Airbnb with another girl. The team was putting us in Airbnbs. Like, Illinois had some crazy restrictions at the time. Mm-hmm. So we spent 2 weeks training in Wisconsin. Like, everyone was living in Illinois, but then you drive to Wisconsin, train there. The first few weeks, we were training in, like, groups of 10 in case somebody got it. So it could be, like, smaller. So that was weird. Like, you were barely, they were like, don't talk to each other. Don't talk to people. Don't, you know, right. Wear your masks. So, you know, it's hard to talk to anybody or meet anybody, really. You're putting your cleats on at the same time, and then you go out to training, and it's like, that's it. So that was for 2 weeks. Then we spent 2 weeks training in Indiana. And at the end of those 4 weeks, I was offered a 2-year contract with a 1-year extension, and so was one other girl that tried out, or that was like trying out. So that was really exciting because I was one of the few girls there that wasn't drafted, and then only 2 of us of all the new girls got offered a contract. And then we went to Utah and lived in a hotel. We were there for 35 days.
Oh, man.
It was terrible. Like, honestly, I think I blacked that time out from, like, my life, because you're just living in a hotel room alone. I'd been on the team for 4 weeks. The 2 girls that I had ended up living with along the course of those 4 weeks didn't make the team, so I didn't know anybody. So, and then, like, the first week, we weren't allowed to eat with each other. You had to eat alone in your room. So I'd be FaceTiming my family and all that, you know, my cousins, friends, whatever. Then we started having meals with the team. But it was rough. It was really hard. Like, you would just go to training every day and then go right back to a hotel room. You weren't allowed to leave the hotel. It was crazy. So now we talk about it as a team, and it's like, we just laugh about it, because what else are you going to do? We're like, that's crazy that we did that. But yeah, at the time, I didn't really talk to a lot of the older girls. Like, I would go to the Bible studies, I remember, and, you know, just do random things just to, like, have contact with people and try to get to know my teammates, like, at all.
So what kept you going through that time? I mean, was it just love of the game, or what was it? Because it sounds, like you said, it sounds pretty terrible. And it sounded like at that point you were kind of on an edge of, like, do you even want to do this professionally or not? So what kept you going?
Yeah, the first year I was very on the fence. I didn't really know if I could make it. I didn't know if it's what I wanted to do. It was really hard. Obviously, it was really weird with COVID. That month in Utah was rough. I think we all just kind of got through it, though. I played in one game for, like, maybe 60 minutes in that whole tournament. I think there were like 6 games total, maybe 7, I don't know. And other than that, I didn't play. And then we got back to Chicago after that, and we had like 4 more games. They were kind of just friendlies, but they were just something the league threw together to have us play. And I got to play a lot in those, actually. And I scored, and I had some assists, and that kind of gave me like some hope. And I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, at a certain level right now, I can play with some of these girls for sure. But yeah, I just kind of, I stuck through it. I think partially because I just had my contract. So, you know, I had a 3-year contract basically. So I was like, I'm in it, you know, I'm not going to just drop out. And I also wanted to give myself a chance to, like, actually get fit to be a professional athlete, you know, give myself a second to get used to the level of play. But yeah, there were definitely times, I think for most of the rookies that season, where we were like, do we really want to be in this right now? Like, because it was hard.
So you made it through.
Yep.
And then you go into your second professional season, and then that comes with change, because before that season was done, you were on loan to one of the biggest organizations on either side in Mexico, in Club America. And that had to be kind of a culture shock, right? I mean, the NWSL is a lot of the best in the world, but there's some great play in Mexico. And oh, by the way, there's this place called Azteca, and you guys get to play there.
Yep.
Like, that had to be a whole 180 in terms of professional from Utah in your hotel room to now here I am in one of the cathedrals of this sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Cathedral is a good way to put it. Yeah, that was crazy. So my second season with the Red Stars, I was playing a little bit more, you know, mainly just as a sub. But I had a lot of performance anxiety. I don't know if it was because I was playing in front of bigger crowds, or just kind of the moments that I was being put in, I kind of let them get to me, and I would just freak out, you know, where you have like your big adrenaline rush. I could do like 2 sprints and then I would just be gassed on the field. You know, I would just be super nervous. Like, in training I would perform, but then in the games I had a really hard time performing. So that's one thing that Rory Dames at the time, the coach, noticed, and he was like, you know, this could be a good opportunity for you. And I was very scared to go down there because I just didn't know what to expect, you know. It was a big change, like you said. But I ended up going down, and I had an incredible experience. It definitely helped with the culture shock, because the culture shock wasn't as bad, I think, because the coaching staff spoke English, and there were several, at least six Mexican Americans on the team who spoke very good English, and then there were other girls on the team that knew English very well. So that helped. And I got to play, and so that was really fun too. You know, after my first game of playing, it was like 75 minutes, I think, but it was the most I'd played in months. And I remember calling my parents and just being like, I forgot how much I loved playing and how exciting it was. So that was a big turning point for me in my career.
At least the last few months, I've saw a lot of social media posts from you that were in Spanish. So how much Spanish did you know before you went down there?
Not very much. Very basic. I took 4 years in high school, but it was a lot of, you know, on paper Spanish. So I knew how to conjugate things. But when people, I still have a hard time when people speak to me, I'm like, más despacio, like, please slow down. I can't understand that well. But yeah, it's getting better. My Spanish is getting better. I'm still taking classes because I really want to learn another language. I think that'd be really cool and open a lot more doors.
You know, a highlight from an external view would be the fact that you're playing there and you work your way into the club, and now you're in a league semifinal, and there are two seasons in the Mexican league, and so you're in basically one half of the season, and you get to score what ends up being a game winner in a cup semifinal in Mexico.
Yeah,
can you describe that feeling for us? Because that has to be something else.
It was incredible. That was my favorite game ever, like of my whole career. Everybody asked what my favorite game was. That was my favorite game, favorite moment, because we were the underdogs. You know, we beat Chivas to get there, which was awesome because I'm a huge Americanista now and I hate Chivas. but yeah, so that was great just getting there. And yeah, playing Tigres in the Azteca, I think there were probably 10 to 15,000 fans there, which in the Azteca, it looks like there aren't that many people there because it's a stadium that fits 80,000 people. Two Jeff cities, that's what I say. but it was so loud and everything just erupted, and I just, you know, ran over to the corner and was just so ecstatic. And then my parents were actually at that game. That was the first game they'd come to. So afterwards, they got to come down on the field and we got to take a picture. And then it was also really incredible because the fans there are amazing. They're so passionate. I love them. They're incredible. But the fan section started singing like, oh, I can't sing, but ole, 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 sada, sada. So that was really cool. Made me feel really special. Yeah, that was an incredible moment, an incredible game and night.
You mentioned the attendance numbers for that game. Just in general, in your experiences in a couple different countries now, what type of growth have you seen in terms of the support and the interest just for women's soccer in general?
Yeah, it's growing a lot. I think my being in Mexico, getting to play, there are like consistently very high crowd, very like large crowds that go to the games there, and the fans are really into the game. And that was something that took some getting used to, but you know, it's kind of like after a few times you play in front of a big crowd, it's kind of like you get used to it. But now coming back to the NWSL, there has been so much support this past season. I think our last game this season we played in the first playoff game in San Diego, and I think there were like 25,000 fans there, 20,000 fans. But yeah, it's incredible. And it's, you know, there are people, so many people watch soccer. So many people love women's soccer, and you know, there's so much support for the women's national team, which is amazing, and there should be. But now we need to get more people to be aware of the NWSL and all the talent that's there, because there are amazing athletes, there's amazing performances, and you know, it's great to see that you know, word is spreading, more people are going to the games and getting to have those experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And spreading in the state with the Current, who have their soccer-specific stadium now coming along. I mean, there really has been a lot of growth. And you mentioned the national team, and folks probably recognize names like Alyssa Nair and Mallory Pugh, who I know came over via trade. When you get to play with these women who are drawn in and have played for their country, is that something that is an aspiration for you in your career? And B, What advice have you taken from them about performance at not just the professional level, but then taking it to that next level too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible to play with them. Just they raise the standard just by being there, but then they also, you know, they demand a lot from their teammates, which is awesome, and that's what we need to see. You know, that's going to help continue to improve the women's game. I of course have dreams of playing for the national team. That would be incredible to get to represent our country on the biggest stage. I'm gonna keep working towards that, you know, hopefully it happens, but I'm just gonna keep, you know, putting my head down and keep working. Advice from them, I mean, just the way they train every day, they are both very hard workers, and you know, I think sometimes players that are at such a high level can go to training sometimes and they don't have to try as hard as they can, because them maybe giving, you know, 70% effort would still be a lot better than a lot of people at training. But I would say, at least from the experiences that I've had with the national team players that I've played with, they all go to training and they work their butts off and they're competitive and they're just continuing to improve their game. And that's something that's really, really inspiring to see.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier, mathematics major at Mizzou.
Yes.
So you have the degree. So how does that, well, first of all, wow, that's not a typical athlete degree path. Second of all, is there anything from that that you use in terms of, you know, looking at, advanced analytics or anything like that, that you're able to apply to your job?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much I apply it to my job, but I love coding. I'm not very good at it, but I did get a sports analytics like certificate my senior year because I had to stay here for another semester for one class. So I just threw in some more stats classes. I ended up getting a stats minor on accident, kind of. But yeah, I actually really like coding. R and Python. So I still do some stuff, like some little like coding websites on the side whenever I can to just practice. And I would love to possibly do something like that after I'm done playing, you know, with some kind of data analytics for any, you know, sports team at all. I like to look at, you know, all the graphs. Like, there's a lot of different data that's coming out of soccer games now that I really like to see. But I don't have a lot of, like, hands-on experience with that.
Well, I mean, someone's going to be listening to the podcast, and all of a sudden you'll get a tap on the shoulder from the club and say, hey, do you mind doing double duty? I mean, I guess if Len Dawson can be a professional quarterback, rest his soul, and also a TV sportscaster at night, maybe you can go ahead and crunch the numbers once you're done with training.
I would love that.
You know, as you look to what may be coming for you, I know that you spent the season with the Red Stars. You mentioned it was a 3-year contract, and right now it's in between. What do you think the future holds for you?
I'm still figuring out what the future holds. I know for sure I'm going to be playing soccer somewhere. I'm just not exactly sure where that is going to be yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you take that forward and what you've learned and what you take from Mizzou, whatever this next year holds for you, what do you think would be the goal for you professionally or personally? Like, what would you like the 23 campaign to be for you?
I think I go into every year thinking this, but I would love for 2023 to hold a trophy. I would love to win a trophy in 2023. That would be amazing.
That is as good a goal as any you could possibly have as a professional. And Sarah Lubert is indeed the native of Jefferson City. The fine Missouri Tiger striker has struck it out across the North American continent now and making her way. And we're so glad, Sarah, that you took a little bit of time with us to tell us about your story here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. We've really had fun.
Thank you guys for having me. This has been great.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah Lubert with us here on the podcast, and we'll have more of it with you after you hear from our friends at Shelter Insurance.
A shield against the elements. Comfort in the midst of chaos. Shelter in the aftermath of destruction. For 75 years, Shelter Insurance has remained true to our promise to be there when you need us most. This is the heartbeat of our company, our why. And throughout our history, it has never wavered. Shelter Insurance. For your auto, home, and life, we're your shield. We're your shelter.
And our podcast, also powered by Socket Fiber, the fastest, most reliable internet, combined with local service and simple billing. Contact Socket today for voice, data, and internet services for your home and business. 1-800-SOCKET3 or visit socket.net. What a cool conversation with Sarah Lubert about a, really an interesting professional career. I was as much interested in that as her time at Mizzou because, I mean, yeah, there are great memories here, but, I mean, coming up as one of the COVID athletes starting your career, which sounded like it was awful there in Utah for that tournament, at least from the players' experience, and then being on loan not like less than a year after that and getting to play with in a league with such passion and hearing that Liga MX Femenil, I hope I'm saying it right, has that type of passion behind it. And to have a moment like that for her as such a young pro, I mean, I only see bigger and better things happening for Sarah Lubert in her pro career, and I think we'll be hearing her name for quite a while.
Well, and as a Mizzou alum and a Jefferson City native, to have those kind of opportunities, she's part of, you know, despite the pandemic slowing it down, it seems like she's part of a wave of just increased interest in women's soccer. You mentioned, you know, down in Mexico, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but
Liga MX Femenil?
Sure, sounds great. Yeah. But, you know, playing for, you know, Club America and that brand, there aren't many bigger brand names in terms of soccer in North America than that. A lot of the big name clubs over in Europe now have women's teams that have a lot of support. I think the most recent Women's World Cup, we saw a lot of people turning out and checking that out. And the one coming up next year, I'm sure will be even bigger than that. And so to see all of that happening in women's soccer, you know, the professional leagues, hopefully they've started to stabilize a little bit because we've seen a few different, you know, starts and stops in terms of professional women's soccer. And hopefully this is the league that is the one that's going to be ascendant. And, you know, people like Sarah Lubert, even if she doesn't necessarily play, you know, domestically, just the fact that that league is taking off is going to open up more opportunities and open up more opportunities for people, you know, globally for players like Sarah Lubert.
Yeah. And I think the fact that, you know, the NWSL has grown with a lot of homegrown players will only help it continue to grow. And we'll see that support. I think we're going to see it big time in Kansas City when the Current open that new stadium. I think we're going to see it across the rest of the league. And so really excited for those opportunities continuing to open up in the women's game of soccer. It's always a growing opportunity, right, for women's sports, but it has really taken its leaps and bounds over the past several seasons, and even through a pandemic that was really challenging, you know, to keep that league going and thriving, I think is real important for players like Sarah.
Yep, big time for soccer, of course, with the Men's World Cup going on currently.
We didn't even ask about.
Yeah, well, that's actually what kind of triggered the idea, I think, for us is like, what's our soccer connection at Mizzou? And, you know, Sarah Lubert is a prime example of that. You know, the opportunity to play in, you know, Estadio Azteca is just, that's pretty.
They played World Cup finals there.
That's remarkable. I mean, that's a really cool thing. And, you know, no matter where she goes from here, the fact that she has a moment scoring a game-winning goal in that venue is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's very sweet indeed. So we appreciate Sarah's time on the pod today. In terms of what's going on at Mizzou, a lot of dubs.
Yeah,
over the weekend, man. Like, the game against Arkansas was as wild and woolly and tight as games against Arkansas have been over time. Missouri 29, Arkansas 27. Both teams end up at 6-6. Both teams end up at 3-5 in the league. So some folks down south who were doing some shouting north, it got carried back on the breeze, I think, down to Hogland. And for good reason, because Missouri stayed together. The question was, would the football team stay together through injuries that led into the past week? Barrett Bannister unavailable to play, and we don't expect to see him again on the field this season due to his injury that held him out. But you think about just what this team has gone through, and it put them in position to have a game like that where they could be in a back-and-forth tussle and hang on, and it was the defense, too, in the end that really helped them hang on to a very important win to get them to the bowl game, which is to be determined. I think full credit to Eli Drinkwitz and his staff and the leadership of that team for not packing it in, because in Week 12, you can pack it in, and teams do. and this Missouri team was not interested in that.
Yeah, Eli Drinkwitz and crew are gonna earn their money coming up the next few weeks. I mean, not, you know, you get the bowl announcement and then the turnaround in terms of that preparation. We'll find out where Mizzou will go bowling coming up this coming weekend. There's also going to be some roster shuffling throughout the country. I think that's pretty clear with the way the transfer portal has changed things dramatically. So you're kind of re-recruiting your own players. You're also trying to, in most cases, finalize your 2023 recruiting class. That's also coming up around the corner. And again, you've got a bowl game coming up at some point, probably in December, for the Tigers. So it's a crazy time. Even though the regular season has ended, in some ways, the work just ramps up even more on the football side. But that Arkansas win, yeah, just a great performance. And a credit to Blake Baker, who had a great year as a defensive coordinator. And, you know, he earned that raise. I mean, Arkansas comes out, they were able to post 21 points in the first half, and then they only score 6 the rest of the way. And while Arkansas has had its struggles down the stretch, most of those struggles were on the defensive side. I mean, this is still an offense with KJ Jefferson, who's a really talented quarterback, Rocket Sanders, likely an all-SEC caliber running back, and to be able to basically shut them down in the second half was really impressive. I believe it was like 113 yards is what it was, mm-hmm, of total offense in the second half for that offense. That's a really good job, and this offense clearly made strides for the Tigers the last few weeks of the year. So a lot of positive things to finish out the year for Ole Mizzou.
The number one thing that should give you the most hope for next season, as it stands right now, like you said, a lot of things can change with the way December's going to look. Brady Cook was the better dual-threat quarterback on the field on Black Friday.
He was, man.
And KJ Jefferson is a good dual-threat with his arm and with his legs quarterback, and Brady Cook outdid him. And that's, I think, the number one reason why Missouri won that game against Arkansas. If you see more of that going forward for Brady Cook and the Missouri offense, you'll see a lot of dubs in the future, I think, for Coach Drink and company.
Well, you look at Brady Cook's numbers for the year. He finishes with more than 2,000 passing yards and 500 rushing yards. You have to go back nearly a decade to James Franklin in 2013 for any Mizzou quarterback who was able to accomplish that. So his ability to run the ball and to, you know, rack up the kind of numbers that he did, 151 rushing yards for any quarterback. I mean, we're not...
And that was the leading output of the entire season for Missouri.
That's crazy. I mean, we're not in the, you know, Tommy Frazier, the Corby Jones. Let's use Corby Jones. That's a better one for Mizzou.
Please don't do that to everybody.
This is not the Corby Jones, you know, triple option era in college football right now. So to have a guy who can do that and also threw some pretty nice balls in that game against the Razorbacks too, more than 200 yards passing. Yeah, that's really encouraging. And that, you know, the quarterback, again, we don't know what the roster is going to look like next year, but that quarterback conversation is going to be really interesting again, it looks like, going into 2023.
Meanwhile, Dennis Gates and his band of thieves continue to win. I say that because as the time we record this, which is on a Monday morning, and a game against Wichita State on Tuesday is coming up, we don't know the result right now. But the defense with the best steal percentage in the country is the Missouri Tigers defense after they didn't steal the game from Houston Christian. They knew they should have won, and they won it 105-69. The offense, according to Ken Pomeroy's ratings, is the 16th most adjusted efficiency in the country. They have a 60% effective field goal percentage. They just score the ball. And oh, by the way, that defense, as you could tell by having the best steal percentage, over 18% of the possessions they got a steal on now in the country, that will level off. But they have clearly improved to me on defense from game 1 to game 7, regardless of what the competition is. They weathered a couple of teams that I think are going to end up being pretty good. Ken Pom this morning, Southern Indiana, 193. I think they have a chance to improve in their league. The Penn Quakers, 156. I think they'll have a chance to improve and possibly win the Ivy. And those were your first two tests, and they were your closest tests. So I think that as we've seen time go on, we see what this Missouri team can be. And oh, by the way, they've improved throughout it. So now, against Wichita State, SEMO at home on Sunday the 4th, and then some team from the West on Saturday the 10th. Can we see this translate into different levels of competition? I think we can from what I've seen, but I, like everybody else, Brad, am eager to find out.
Yeah, ready to see the level up that's coming in terms of the schedule for Mizzou the rest of the way. They're kind of like Robin Hood-type thieves, though, because they're not just taking them and keeping them from themselves. They're taking them and then they're distributing them.
Yes.
28 assists in that game against Houston Christian, and it's every single game 20-plus assists. That is not a common thing in a 40-minute basketball game.
It's never happened at Mizzou, a team that all seven games in a row have had 20 or more assists in a game.
When you think about all the good distributors that have been here, including one who's on the staff for Dennis Gates and Phil Pressey, and to never have a team that does stuff like this, because it can't just be one guy who racks up 20 assists. That has to be a collective thing, and it has to be a collective buy-in. I mean, there was one play where, you know, was it the smartest decision for Trey Gomillion to bounce it back when he had a wide-open layup and give it to Mosley to do it instead? No, it wasn't the smartest thing, but the margin was pretty big. And I think it, in some ways it's emblematic of how much these guys are okay with, you know what, I don't have to get to a certain number for myself in terms of individual points per game. There's a collective effort that's taking place right now with this team, and to me that's the most exciting part.
The thing that I see is they want to do it. They want to share the basketball. They derive some sense of satisfaction from knowing that their teammate can score. And it shows. They have the 11th best assist to field goal makes ratio in the country through their first seven games. They have assisted on nearly 65% of their made field goals. You can't defend a team like that, or not very efficiently or effectively. If you don't know who the star is going to be night to night, and everybody who's on the team is okay with that, that's a hard team to prepare for and a hard team to play against. And why I think we will start to see against the tougher competition, similar aspects of this play continue to thrive as long as they continue to execute.
Well, and the reality is during the main part of the season for college basketball teams, the scouting report typically doesn't go beyond the starters too much because there just isn't enough time. I mean, you're playing a game every few days. There's only so much information you can stick in a kid's head before they have to go out and perform when that kid also has like classes and other stuff going on. And oh yeah, they're like 18 years old. So for a team like Mizzou, like where, like you said, you don't know who it's going to be night to night, and it could be one of 10 or 11 different options. That makes it a really, really difficult scout.
And on the side of Missouri's women's team, hey, they played one of the teams that you think, Brad, is going to be one of the best in the country in Virginia Tech. All right, they took their lumps, but they hung with them at least for a half in that game. And now the lessons of that going forward, I think, will be well taken into the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a fun first half that Mizzou actually had the lead going into the locker room before things got away from them, especially in the third. But that's a Virginia Tech team that the latest top 25 is not out as we're recording this, but they're going to be a top 10 team nationally, and they could stay there for the bulk of the year. I wouldn't be surprised by that. They've held two different teams in the 20s in terms of points already. So this is a really good defensive team that Mizzou went up against, scored nearly 60 points. So there's still, but there's a lot to learn from that. And this is a group that's, you know, still getting up to speed on playing with each other. A key injury to Caitlin Gilbert occurred during that game in the first half, and maybe it looks a little different if she's back and healthy for that contest, and hopefully she'll be returning soon. Mizzou has a home game against SLU and then hitting the road for two more interesting games away from home in Tempe, Arizona. They've got the host Arizona State and a UMass team that was really successful last year. So a couple more measuring stick games against teams that aren't necessarily in the top 25, but that are teams that are solid competition as the Tigers, you know, wind their way toward SEC play in late December like the men.
We're kind of past crossover season, but not exactly.
Not quite.
Because a bowl is to come, and plenty of more fun is to come in the winter sports. Of course, wrestling will be continuing as they go through. We didn't even talk about Coach Brian Smith. Honestly, we're out of time because we had so much good stuff going on. So we'll make sure to get to that next time. And, of course, you can hear the Tiger Style Report here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast feed. And while you're here, why don't you go to your podcast thing of choice and just click that subscribe button and get this all the time. So you never have to worry about it ever again. And for those of you who have, you're in the right place.
Yeah,
because we're going to keep bringing you cool stuff as we go through the winter.
Sure thing. Props to Keegan O'Toole and Rocky Elam for their titles at the NWCA
right.
All-Star Classic. And some news out of the volleyball program. There's going to be a change there. So we'll have a new volleyball coach to talk to, I'm guessing, here in the next few weeks.
Yes. So we will keep on top of it for you. Never a dull moment, as they say, here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast and surrounding the Tigers and their sports. Brad Trinago, always a pleasure, my friend.
Yep, good to have you. Good to be back in the stateside.
Yes, indeed. Don't have too many rum runners while you're back home. They don't make them the same. He's Brad. I'm Matt. Thanks to Sarah Lubert for joining us. Really appreciated her time. And we will talk to you next time here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Matt Michaels and Brad Trinago. Brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Central Bank Tiger Network.